Raleigh Bilingue presents a town hall with residents of Congressional District 21 in California, a battleground in the fight for Congress. This public forum was recorded live at the Woman's Clubhouse in Sanger, California on October 15, 2018. This is a production of Raleigh Bilingue in collaboration with KQED Public Radio in San Francisco.
Hello, everyone. Welcome, everyone, to this town hall meeting on behalf of Radio Bilingue and KQED. Welcome to this town hall meeting for residents of Congressional District 21. I'm Samuel Orozco. I'm your host from Radio Bilingue. It's about 3 weeks to Election Day. Are you ready to go out and vote? Yeah. Todos a votar, todos a las urnas. We in Radio Bilingue are visiting this community, the city of Sanger, in the heart of Congressional District 21, to see what residents think about the election. And we have chosen District 21 for several reasons. Number one, this is a majority Latino district. About 3 out of 4 residents are Latinos, a tremendous population power, a tremendous demographic power. This is a district with very dire, very critical needs. It is one of the poorest districts in the whole nation. The rate of unemployment is twice as high as in the nation, as in the rest of the nation. This is a key battleground in the fight for Congress. The decisions of local voters will have a tremendous impact in the political landscape in the rest of the nation. Yet, listeners from the area call a radio service called the station to report that beyond the campaign ads and beyond the attacks, there is a dearth of information. There is a tremendous lack of information, of public conversation on the campaigns and on the significant issues. So we in Radio Bilingue decided to facilitate a conversation between candidates and residents from this area to talk about the issues that are in the minds of the voters. And we're partnering with KQED, with the KQED Public Radio, because of our mutual interest in reporting on matters of the highest public concern, and because of our mutual tradition of civic journalism, of public journalism. So for this session, we have invited both candidates, Republican incumbent David Valadao, who has been 6 years in office, and Democratic challenger TJ Cox, Terrence John Cox. Only TJ Cox accepted our invitation. Representative David Valadao declined our offer. So to facilitate this session, let's welcome Alex Hall. She's a news reporter in the Central Valley for public for partner station KQED, which is public radio in San Francisco. Alex, bienvenida.
Thank you, Samuel, and thank you everyone for being here. As Samuel mentioned, I'm KQED Public Radio's reporter in the Central Valley, so I cover Stockton to Bakersfield for the California Report, which is a statewide show that airs on many NPR stations throughout the state. Just so that everyone knows what the plan is for tonight, in a moment I will ask our guest, congressional candidate TJ Cox, a couple of questions that I prepared in collaboration with Radio Bilingue. I will then pass the mic to a few invited special guests that we have who will each ask one or two questions that are important to them. We will then move to the audience, and we want to give each of you as much time as possible to ask Mr. Cox any of the important questions that are on your mind. When that time comes, there are two ways to ask a question. We have the microphone here in the front. You can form a line and ask any question that you want. Identify yourself, please. Or if you feel more comfortable, we are going to have index cards, and we will have Maria de Jesus, who is in the back. Everyone look, Maria de Jesus has index cards. If you wanna, if you feel more comfortable writing down your question on an index card, she can give you one. You can write it down. You don't have to identify yourself if you don't want to, and then I will ask the question on your behalf. And we'll try to get to as many of those as possible. I also wanna remind everyone that this conversation is being recorded. So it will be broadcast on Radio Bilingue and will also be made available online at radiobilingue.org. Just so that everyone is aware. I'll now introduce our invited guests who are sitting in the front rows of the audience. Our first invited guest is Sandy Cantu Hermosillo. She works with seniors in an in-home care agency in Sanger, and she's involved with the Alzheimer's Association. Sandy, thank you for being here. Up here on the left side of the stage, front row, is Brenda Cabrera from Sanger. She is a sophomore at Fresno State University and an aspiring attorney. Thank you, Brenda. And our third special guest is Jose Villarreal, former mayor of Sanger, in the gray hat. He's a member of the board of directors of Radio Bilingue as well. Our guest tonight is TJ Cox. Mr. Cox is an engineer and the leader of a community development organization. He's the creator and president of the Central Valley Fund, which works to attract private investment in low-income communities here in the Central Valley. Mr. Cox is the Democratic candidate running to represent District 21 in Congress. Welcome, Mr. Cox. We are lucky to have Mr. Cox here with us in person. Thank you for giving us your time and attention. And I will give you the floor now if you'd like to make an opening statement.
Thank you so much, everyone, for coming tonight. It's an honor to reach out and speak directly to the voters. I am TJ Cox, the Democratic candidate for Congress here in the 21st. And thank you. And Sam, thank you for defining TJ for me. It's Terrence John in English, but in Spanish, it's todos juntos. Yeah. that's all together. I'm a native Californian and the son of immigrants. My father came from China, my mom from the Philippines, and like many immigrants, they came to the States, they worked hard, they became proud, naturalized U.S. citizens. They instilled in me the principles that we all know, hard work, integrity, looking out for others. And based on those principles, I formed my organization to make a difference in the lives of the people here, right here in the Central Valley. And a great example of what we've been able to do, literally, is across the street with the new health clinic, the health clinic that opened up just back in February, some 7-8 months ago. And that is a great example of what I try to do day in and day out. Make a difference in the lives of people. This health clinic was supposed to create 45 jobs, created 75 jobs. And these are all well-paying jobs that offer benefits. Those health clinics brings out healthcare to where it's needed, to serving the people that needs it, and when it's needed. And so that's what I do every day, try to make a positive difference in the lives of the people, and that's what I know I can continue to do in Congress.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. So, Mr. Cox, voters want to get to know you, and they want to know where you stand. We know you began this election season as a candidate for Congress in District 10. Then you shifted to this district. Can you explain why you want to represent this district, District 21, and what you think the most important issues in this district are?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I can tell you, there's an interesting story behind that, and it goes back, actually, to the clinic right across the street. When I originally set up my organization, my community development entity, we have a pretty simple mandate to make a positive difference in the lives of the people, and we do that from one end of the valley down to the other. And when I was looking at running for a congressional seat, because I knew I could make a difference, back in February, I was at the grand opening of this clinic. And At that grand opening, the CEO got up and said, you know, this was an empty lot for 4 or 5 years. Frankly, we wondered if we could ever get this clinic built because we're serving a relatively poor population and we're in a relatively economically distressed area. And capital and money is very difficult to come by for these types of things. But there was one guy here in the crowd today that was able to pull it all together for us, find us some very innovative capital, and get this deal done for us. Thank you, TJ Cox. All right? And at that same time, as you know, and you've probably been to some of these grand openings, every elected official parades up there with a proclamation, a certificate that says, congratulations on your opening. And my opponent, Mr. Valadeo, was there, his staff was, with a proclamation. And I'm looking at him and I'm going, well, what did you do for this clinic? You voted against the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, that pays for people to come to the clinic. You voted to terminate the Community Development Fund, which were the funds that we actually used to build the clinic. And then, for the young men and women who have got jobs at the clinic, who want to advance their careers, if the clinic offered them tuition reimbursement, you voted to make that taxable income to them. So here are three different ways that you're working against the best interests of the people in this district. But shortly, right after the ceremonies ended, one of the electeds from here in town, he comes up to me and says, you know, TJ, we really wish you were running down here in the 21st. And then we sat down at lunch and a community member came up and said, gosh, TJ, we really wish you were running here in the 21st. And about a week after that, the fellow that was running in the race, or was thinking about running a race, Amelia Carta, decided to drop out. And I can tell you, I took that as a sign from above that this is where I needed to be. This is where I could make the most difference. This is where I've been making a difference. I knew I can continue to make a difference. And I can tell you, with the challenges that people face here in the 21st Congressional District, I don't think there's a congressman who's more out of touch with their district than David Valadeo.
So healthcare, development, those are some of the issues that you think are...
Yeah, it's healthcare and development. It's not so much development. You know, it's healthcare, it's jobs and opportunity. You need two basic building blocks to be successful in America, right? You need education and you need health. You got those two and you are a long ways towards being successful. You know, you apply some hard work to that and you're going to be a success. Just like everyone here, we all know if we work hard, we stay healthy, we get educated, we're going to be a success in America.
Thank you so much. As you know, this district is home to a large immigrant community, and many families here are low income. A few weeks ago, the federal government announced proposed changes to public charge policies. Those are the rules that govern who can be denied legal permanent residency or a green card in the United States if it's determined that they are likely to rely on government assistance if they stay in this country. If approved, this rule would mean that some individuals and families could be denied a green card based on their current or expected future use of programs, including Medicaid, food stamps, and other housing and nutritional programs for low-income households. What is your position on the proposed changes to public charge policies?
When I was a boy, I have two brothers, and my father, who was a very smart, very interesting guy, was killed in a car accident, leaving me and my two brothers and my mom all alone. And at that time, there was something called, it was actually called OASDI, Old Age Survivors Disability Insurance, otherwise known as Social Security Insurance. I mean, that was a social safety net to help a family pick themselves off the ground, or at least not hit the ground, and be able to get back on their feet. Is that a public charge? Absolutely, it's a public charge. Those are the types of public charges that are good investments in America. This new proposal by this administration is such an affront. I can tell you, there's a reason why Donald Trump has been bankrupt 4 times, because he doesn't know a good deal. This is gonna spend a dollar to try to save a dime, and what's it gonna do? It's gonna put the risk of not only of our immigrant children at risk, but our entire Central Valley. Because I can tell you, you know, a disease doesn't care if this kid's been immune, has got vaccinated, right? It's going to attack, it is going to threaten the public health of the entire Central Valley. And frankly, I think it's just another outreach to, once again, demonize the immigrant community. Because I can tell you what, is there anybody that works harder in the Central Valley than their immigrant community? Every time I look around, I mean, it's the immigrants that are working, that are making a difference here.
Thank you so much for that answer. Again, I'm going to turn to our special invited guests in the audience. I believe that Sandy Cantu Hermosillo wants to go first. Do you want to stand up to the mic and tell us about yourself and what your question is?
Okay. Hi, TJ. I think we've run into you a few times. In reference to you speaking about the United Health Center, I happened to be at that grand opening, and I happened to be there when they recognized you and being impactful in having the center be built. And it's been an honor running into you and being part of meetings and being part of your campaign and getting the word out to get the vote out for you, as is my dad right here. So with that, I have an in-home care agency here in Sanger, and I work with seniors, and I have recently became part of the Alzheimer's Association. Alzheimer's is a disease that's rising rapidly, and it's afflicting Latinos 50% more than any other racial or group, non-Latino whites. And so because you've had a big impact, and it's obvious that you have healthcare as a high priority for you, I wanted to ask, how important is this disease in your priority of healthcare? And what's your plan for funding and research and for formal care? I don't know if the group here today know that Medicare for those seniors, there really isn't a lot of money for care in residential facilities. And there isn't a lot of money for care in the home for that type of care. And I see families being afflicted every day. And I have some friends that tell me, Sandy, it's $4,000 a month for me to have some formal care in a facility for my mom, and I just can't pay that. I'm a single mom with three kids, one in high school, one in college, and one in junior high, and she is the primary caregiver and also works a full-time job. So I wanted to ask that. What how would that rank in your priority list when you become our congressman for the 21st district?
Thank you so much for that question. That is something I'm going to work on immediately. My mom suffers from dementia. She's 88 years old. She's happy as a lark. She can't remember she's in Fresno or Bakersfield or wherever. And it's an affliction that I think maybe everyone here knows somebody or has a relation. Particularly, you know, it hits, as you're saying, Latinos at a disproportionate rate, and also women. And there really hasn't been much done about it at all. But what we can do is there was some legislation proposed by the late Senator Kennedy with the CLASS Act, you might remember that, which is an assisted living, and the assisted living waivers that are being opened up by Medicare right now. Medicare realizes that this is a growing concern that needs to be addressed. And so they're granting assisted living waivers to be able to allow Medicare payments for that. But also, you know, that the most of the Medicaid funding goes towards seniors care and nursing care. And that needs to be expanded, not just towards nursing care, but also for things like assisted living and dementia care. And that's why you may know that my opponent is got some spurious, crazy ads out there about an assisted living, a dementia care community that I actually opened, because it is so personal to me, because I see the types of care that's out there. And regardless of what he says, I'm so happy and proud of that facility. We're actually rated in the top 1% in the nation for resident satisfaction and the quality of care, because we know how important that is. And absolutely, you know, the thing is that, is it gonna take some more investment? Yeah, absolutely, it's gonna take more investment. But what a better, there couldn't be a better investment made than taking care of our seniors, giving them the dignity that they deserve after they've worked hard, they've paid taxes their entire lives. And so that's absolutely something I should. So that's absolutely something that I'm going to be focused on with a laser-like vision. Thank you.
Brenda Cabrera, do you wanna ask a question?
All right, so I actually have two questions for you, Mr. TJ. So the first one's based on my experiences as being a student organizer with Valley Forward, a nonprofit organization that advocates for safer neighborhoods and also better jobs. And so I've actually had the opportunity to walk a lot in District 21, and especially the cities of Parlier, Sanger, and Salma. And some of the concerns that I've heard from the voters are that some, in Parlier especially, there is a lack of quality education, and students are not being prepared enough as they're getting ready to go to college. And so that's one of the biggest concerns that they're having. And then also in other areas, along with just in the entire District 21, I've heard a lot of voters and residents there say that they need safer and more drinkable water, since some of them sometimes have certain odors or just they don't have safe water, you know? So that's something that those are two main issues. And my question to you is just, what is your plan to try to address those two main issues in some of the areas in District 21? And then you want me to say the next question?
I thought that was.
No.
Go ahead.
So the other one is basically just based on undocumented students. So I do have a couple of friends that are undocumented, and they usually tend to struggle a lot finding jobs because they don't have a legal work permit or anything like that in order to find a decent job. And as they're getting ready to graduate from college, they're finding it difficult, and they're kind of being uncertain of whether they'll be guaranteed a job after graduating from college. So basically, they don't even qualify for DACA as well. So that's why I mentioned this. So do you think there's a possibility to expand DACA? I mean, I'm not sure if that's something that it's possible, but or maybe even something that allows them or guarantees that they can work legally in the United States, possibly.
So. Yeah. Thank you. I'll take the second question first. Absolutely. With the young members of our society, the undocumented that may have been here for a long time, we all know that there should be just a clean DREAM Act, right? Just a direct path to citizenship. These young men and women have been here. They've been working hard. They've been studying. I mean, they're teachers, nurses, doctors. You know, they're in our military, and they're every bit as American as my kids, as the kids, you know, out here today. There should just be a clean DREAM Act. They shouldn't be being used as a bargaining chip for a border wall or some type of a token out there. You know? And I can tell you, is that everyone knows that on both sides of the aisle. We just need the political willpower, right, and the Congress, a Democratic Congress, to be able to push that through, and we can promise you that that's going to happen. On the first other two questions regarding public education and clean, fresh drinking water, those are two basic rights that I think we should be able to enjoy as Americans. Clean, fresh drinking water and a quality public education. You know, it's interesting is that I was just reading this pretty lengthy report. Since the Great Recession in 2008 through 2016, there were 11.5 million jobs created. You know, thank you, Obama, okay? And so, but out of that 11.5 million jobs, there were only 80,000 jobs, less than a tenth of 1%, that were for people with a high school education or less. The bare minimum nowadays is at least some post-secondary education. And so that means we need to be investing in our community colleges, our universities, our vocational schools. And certainly the vocational schools is just so important. I can tell you that I've got two brothers. One's a fantastic tattoo artist. He went that route into art. My other brother is a fantastic building contractor. And he's the smartest one of all of us, you know? And so he likes to use his hands and his mind to build great things. And he picked up those skills at shop class, at wood shop and metal shop back in high school. And so I think we really need to be able to bring those back to high school and certainly expand the number of vocational opportunities for high school kids and those recently graduated as well. So those are two. And with regard to clean, fresh drinking water, I mean, it is a crime that, you know, that we have 300-some communities here, you know, throughout California, and particularly in the Central Valley, that don't have access to clean, fresh drinking water. I was just out in Stratford, right? You know, they didn't have access for water for, what, 3 weeks or so? You know, we're bringing pallets of water out there. Why? Because they didn't have the infrastructure investments to have the, you know, the solid wells and solid water systems that they absolutely need. And all of that takes is a little bit more investment that they deserve by their government, okay? And we have that. But I can tell you what's happened is that with this tax bill that was passed last year, the one that doubled the deficit, you know, it's gonna be $1 trillion this year. Now what are they telling us? We don't have the money for you. You're gonna have to drink poor water. You're gonna have to drink brown water, smelly water, arsenic laden with arsenic or sulfides or nitrates. It's all the choices we have to make. And the choices we have to make are either invest in our communities or give money to the very, very wealthy and to corporations, you know, and let them trickle the money down to us. We know it's not going to happen. We have to make the investments that we know that we need here in our own communities. Yeah. So.
Mr. Cox, just to go back to the water quality question, I think that we all understand what a serious issue it is here in California and that access to safe drinking water is a right in California. But can you just explain more about, you know, if you were elected to Congress, would you have the authority to actually change that? And if so, what would you do to change that?
Well, the thing is that these type of public infrastructure projects, everyone knows that we need them. It's just not here in the Central Valley. It's throughout the country. And actually, in the Congress, there's a specified program. It's called the 10-20-30 program. And what it is, it's 10% of the appropriations budget is set aside for communities that are characterized by 20% poverty for over 30 years. So 10% set aside for communities that have poverty for over 30 years. Does that sound like any place we know? Right? That is exactly for the Central Valley. But what you need to do to tap that money is have a congressman that goes after it. And that's what I've been doing every day, not as a congressman, but with my own organization. I've been going to Washington to get the money back that we deserve right here. Just last year, I mean, over the last 6 years, I've secured $120 million for the things that we need here. Healthful. And as a congressman, you're going to add a zero to that. We're going to have clean water systems and wastewater systems and sewer systems and infrastructure and community health clinics and job training facilities and so on. We're going to get the money back that we deserve here. Thank you.
Yeah. So. Thank you. Mr. Villarreal, did you want to make a comment?
Yes. Thank you. Jose Villarreal. And I've met you before, and I like what I hear. And what I wanted to do, first of all, was to say gracias and bienvenido a su casa, aquí en el Valle. We would like to say thank you, and welcome to this valley, to this area, this community of ours that we so much care for. As a former mayor of this community, and as a former public servant, not only as a mayor, but also within the government as an attorney in public service. And without question, we are cognizant of the issues of the issues that are being presented to we know that those issues, yet the mere absence of your opponent in this forum indicates what he believes the situation to be. He will be dismissive, will continue to be dismissive of our concerns. And we are here to implore to you that, you know, we are looking for somebody that understands the community, understands the needs of the community, and respects every community in this valley. And that's a comment. My question to you, that is based on what's happening right now, right before the elections, they're gonna come after you. They're going to demonize the heck out of you. And my question is basically this: what are your plans to respond to these attacks constantly, and, you know, with very vicious attacks that we've never seen this before, we will see them in the next 3 weeks. And with that, my simple question is, how are you planning to respond? I see that you are responding to the issues that we care about, yet we know how this game is played and how it will continue to be played. And with that, thank you.
Well, thank you, Mayor, and thank you for your service. Yeah, it's too bad that politics could be such a dirty game sometime. And that's why I'm so happy I'm frankly not a politician. I'm an engineer. And as an engineer, what do I try to do? I try to fix things. I try to get things done, regardless of who gets the credit. But, you know, Mr. Valadao, his strategy is very clear. It's the same old Washington games, right? Don't say anything. Don't come out to the community. Don't answer a question. Just demonize your opponent and think you squeak by. I mean, the one ad that you won't see, the one mailer that you won't see, is what David Vela's gotten done over the last 6 years, all right? But here's the thing is, what we all know. We all know that these are the same old tired games, or else he would be putting up about what he's done. Has he gotten anything accomplished on immigration? No. On water? No. When it comes to building health clinics, you know, if it was for him, we wouldn't have the clinic there. He's trying to take away your health care, and with these tax cuts to the billionaires, the corporation, he's attacking your Medicare and Social Security. He's not going to run on that. He's going to gin up a bunch of, you know, falsehoods and lies and misleading attacks on me, right? I can tell you, I think everyone's mom said, you know, if you don't have something nice, don't say anything at all, right? I mean, what type of example is that setting for his kids? I mean, how would you go to church, right, and say, this is the way I'm going to win this election? I tell you, when I go to Mass on Sunday, I sleep with a pretty good head, okay? And so it's no strategy. It's going out there, telling the truth about what I've done, what our plans are for the future, how we can all work together for a better community for all, and how we can get a fair shake for everyone, for the American worker, for the middle-class families, and the people that need a hand up in life. That is my strategy, and that's something I'm very proud to run on. So.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. So there's a reason this is called a public forum. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, please come up to the microphone, and we'd love to hear what you have to say.
Good evening, Mr. Cox. How have you been doing?
Very well.
My name is Lupe Balladares, and we belong to the Lourdes Huertas Foundation, chapter, Sangren chapter. And we are in a situation where we need someone to help us push some of the issues that we have here in Sangren, like schools, and, you know, the people are dropping out of schools and they can't get them back to schools. We need to have someone that can push for more finances to help build more jobs here. You know, I understand that you help with the clinic, and it's great. You see about 45, 75 employees right there. How many employees are from Sangar? How many people work there from Sangar? You know, it's great to have it, but we got to get the people from Sangre working here. You know, we can have people from outside work, but how many people from here are from Sangre? And we need jobs. Not, look at the type of people we have here. These are seniors, older. We need jobs for their children. You know, we need those kind. We need vocational trainers, vocational schools right here in Sangre. It's good to have it in Reedy. I've been there before. I went to a vocational school myself, and I graduated from Prentice City, you know, as a mechanic. So I know how it is. It takes education. But we need people that can be encourage their children to say, you know, go to school. But when we don't see results in our own community, we tend to say, hey, what for? You know, it's the same old thing anyway. You know, okay. And that's just a comment that I wanted to make, you know, that we need someone that can be up there, congressman that can be out there and say, you know, we need something over here in that city. This city is supposed to be a great city. This is a national Christmas tree city, and, you know, it's not national no more. It's got to be, We got to bring it out again. We got to get it up. Thank you.
Well, we know that Sanger has the best high school football food, though, don't we? All right? But I really like the point about the local jobs, and I can tell you that is a focus of my organization. When we make an investment, we make sure that those jobs are available to the local residents. And so we have an intense focus on that. I couldn't give you the exact percentage of the jobs created here, but I could look it up. I just don't have it at hand. But it's interesting. We were in Mendota the other day, a place where we've opened up another clinic, and I was talking to a lady at the door, and she said, well, what have you done around here? And I said, well, we opened up the clinic down the street. And she goes, oh, that? And she goes, yeah, oh, that's a really nice clinic. Yeah, they do lots of things. But I never go there. I go, well, what? And she goes, yeah, everyone in town works there, so they'd know my business. And so she didn't want people knowing, you know, what ails her. But it was nice to hear about. She was relating that so many people in the town worked at that. But I can tell you one of the other things that's just so important about the jobs that we create. These just aren't minimum wage jobs. I mean, a minimum wage job doesn't really help, right? You need a job that pays a living wage and offers benefits. You know, what I call a quality job. And that's what we produce at places like the clinic right across the street. Every one of those jobs offers benefits. You know, healthcare, retirement, time off, and those types of things. And one of the things that we typically have our organizations offer is tuition reimbursement, where a young man or woman, or any man or woman, or a person that's working at the clinic could take a class, and the organization actually helps pay for that class. They might pay back or reimburse them for their tuition. And I was speaking to a young woman at one of these clinics in that she had been working at McDonald's, a single mom. She had gotten an entry-level job at this clinic. And because they offered tuition reimbursement, she took it upon herself to get an AA nursing degree, and it took her some 3.5 years. But now that she had that degree, she was making $58,000 a year in pay and benefits. All right? So that's the type of investments we should be making, investments into people. We're not giving them a complete handout, we're giving them a hand up. She took the initiative, she's gonna take the classes, she's gonna work at night, she's gonna, you know, take classes over the weekend and the summers, and she's gonna make a better life for her and her child. I mean, those are the types of things that really kind of get me excited, and that's where I know we can help. And those are the types of positive economic and social investments we need to continue, right? And that's something I'm going to be dedicated to doing when I'm in Congress.
Does someone else from the audience have a question?
My name is Vicky Filgas Trevino. I am a former educator, and now I'm a farmer. And I just want to say that today I went to my P.O. box and I opened it up and it was jammed full of stuff. And I started pulling it out. And do you know, there were not one, not two, not three, but four smear brochures. And one of them was this long, this long, this long. smear campaign against you, TJ. And, you know, I mean, it just hurts my heart, but I just want the public to know, I think, what's going on, because, you know, there's so much that you could say, but you're too much of a gentleman and a across-the-board man. I mean, if we were to talk about Valadao and his bankruptcy, his family is in bankruptcy. I mean, if you can't have a business, how are you a government official? I mean, there's so much. I just want the public to know that these things are happening, and I know it's the last few weeks and it's going to get ugly, but it's getting real ugly and I don't like it. So that's just a comment. The other thing that I'd like to ask you about is, as a farmer and our water situation, because I just went to Water Quality Control Board to do all my stuff. You guys know about this, Water Quality Control Board. Okay. I'm wondering, you as an engineer, is it not maybe time to rethink our canal system? I mean, it's 200 years old, 150 years old, and we're still putting water from the dams into these canals. And I mean, most of the people that I know that are farmers aren't even using the canal water anymore. And all it's doing is evaporating. So maybe it's time, you're an engineer, to think about recharging the underground instead of putting it through. Just a thought. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vicki. Oh, wow, you got three nasty mailers about me in one day. Four. Actually, I show those to my kids, and they get a pretty good laugh out of them. And that's the truth. You know, the thing is, I've been here for 20, almost 20 years, 19 to be precise. My wife, you may know, is a pediatric intensive care physician who takes care of the children here in the Central Valley from Madera all the way down to Bakersfield. I'm very proud of the things I've done and the people I've helped. And I can tell you that one of the happiest moments of my life is my daughter, actually, at her school, she was chosen, out of all the kids, they only choose one kid, for the Christian Values Award, right? It's about what you really do and how you treat other people. And I like to think that she might get that from herself and my mom. With regard to water, I mean, that's something that really gets me excited. Okay, because I am an engineer, rotating equipment and pumps and pipelines and that sort of thing, something I've got quite a bit of experience in. And here's what I know, is that we could be doing so much more with really innovative investments in our water infrastructure. Like you said, we really should be expanding on an exponential scale the number of underground water banks, downstream water banking, so much more efficient, a fraction of the cost, and it puts water under local control. Distribution systems, like you said, maybe not canals, maybe piping, right? No evaporative loss, easier to maintain over the long term. That's more capital investment here in the Central Valley. And when we have excess water events, like we did in 2017, we can get the water out to where it should be and do some flood irrigating and recharging the aquifer. And then really, the last thing is conservation and other things. I can tell you that one of the investments I'm very happy to have a hand in was a bioenergy plant up in North Fork, California. And up in North Fork, it's by Bass Lake. It's actually the actual geographic center of California. We're taking the dead trees of the Sierras, some 140 million dead trees, and turning those into clean energy. And it's really a win across the board. One, it's reducing fire danger and fire hazards for our mountain communities. Very, very important. Two, it's creating a number of jobs, very high paying jobs in the clean energy tech sector, jobs of the future. Three, it's producing clean energy, renewable energy. And four, the byproduct of this process, of this biomass process, is a product called biochar, which is really activated carbon. You add biochar to your irrigated croplands, and you reduce water consumption by some 20%. And so you're winning across the board. And that's something that could be done right now at a fraction of the cost of building big, large surface water dams, right? Which, I mean, so. So those are the investments that we could be making today, not waiting 10 years and some financing come by and environmental reviews and so on. And those are the types of innovative investments I'm going to be making in water infrastructure when I'm in Congress.
How much of that is regulated by the state and how much is by the federal government? I mean, how much could you do? Is there a bill or something in Congress that you would support or a new idea for legislation that you could propose?
Yeah, absolutely. This bioenergy plant is half funded by a state grant. The state has a mandate of a certain amount of renewable energy comes from mountain communities, and this is one of those. But you know, California has been a real leader in renewable and clean technologies and clean energy, right? That's California. We're going the opposite way on the federal side. Look at the attacks on the EPA. Look at the attacks on our environment. We have a congressman and a Congress and a president that don't believe in climate change, right? Do we not? I mean, we can see it with these thousand-year hurricanes that are happening every other week. You know, wake up. You know, these things are real. And I can tell you is that I look at that not with a skeptic's eye, as an eye of a chemical engineer. The science is there. We're getting shorter winters, you know, we're getting smaller snowpacks, and we have to adapt or we're going to be gone.
That's an interesting question. I mean, how would you work with others in Congress who don't believe in climate change? How would you approach that?
I can tell you, the people that are really starting to believe in climate change are insurance companies, all right? When your storm insurance or hurricane insurance or flood insurance, right, goes through the roof because they know that this thousand-year storm is going to happen every other year, it's going to get people's attention. And everyone knows where we need to be going. We need to be reducing carbon, sequestering carbon, and really going towards these green technologies. Yeah, that's the path of the future.
Thank you. Another question from the audience.
Sure. Vic Yellowhawk White. I was going to say something about insurance companies, but you beat me to it. they when it hits their pocketbook, they have become the folks that are trying to get other people to understand that climate change is real. The seasons are changing. We Native people have prophecies of things that are going to come. And part of prophecies, I guess you'll say, is like they don't have to be cataclysmic. You know, they can be challenges. And when you're elected, how do you propose to, you can't really legislate, you have to demonstrate folks getting along and being, you know, it's like a cliche thing, but being one with the earth. It's like, I know my relatives here. I grew up in Parlier, and a quick way to get in a fight is to talk about somebody's mama or talk about somebody's sister, you know, and it's like, they're really messing with Big Mama right now.
Yeah.
You know, the polite term is Mother Earth, but you think about her, and she's like all of our moms, and they're messing with her. And it's our responsibility to elect, I guess at this point, but all of us to function in a way that makes her better, makes her well. And to elect people that have that kind of a commitment. And yeah, to put it in a question form, like how would you lead by example?
Thanks so much. There's a number of ways, but it's I can tell you it's we could lead by example by you know, taking a bipartisan backpacking trip up to Glacier National Park, you know? And the reason why is because everyone in Montana, my wife's a native Montanan, my folks actually met at Montana State University. Every time they go there, they just shake their heads about how far the glaciers have receded. They see that right there. And you know, there's no denying that the planet's getting warmer and the glaciers are going the opposite way. And then you layer on a little science to show that how that has been because of man-made causes and the increase of carbon and carbon dioxide in the environment. So there's those distinct things that you can actually point them out. And the incidents, like we said, of these huge cataclysmic storms that we're having, I think that everyone is getting on board, and to ignore it, the other side is going to be really on the wrong side of society history if they continue to do it much longer. So. Sir?
Good evening, Mr. Cox. A couple of questions I have, and they're very valid questions.
Sure.
Number one is, what if elected to a congressional seat, we have a problem in the state of California with, they call it canvassing. It's called, in legal terms, it's marijuana. It's legalized. As a congressman, it's not legal through the federal government, but is legal in California. California spent millions of dollars to get that through, and now we have it, and it's going to be a big problem in this state. There's a lot of people that are leaving the state of California, one, because of that. Number two is the high taxes. Somebody spoke about unemployment, high unemployment in California. Here in the Valley, you go to Mendota, you just mentioned Mendota, 100% Hispanic. All migrant farm workers. My parents were immigrants. My wife's parents were immigrants. We have four kids and they're all educators. And hard work gets you to where you can start living a normal, good life. But you go north to Arizona and the gasoline is a dollar a gallon less than it is here. The roads are like glass. There's a problem with our high taxes here in California. We have the highest tax rate in all the United States. We're number one in taxes. People can't afford all these taxes. And what are you going to be doing with reducing the tax crisis that we have here in the state? And then the third one is water. Farmers need water to bring more jobs to the valley. They're cut down to water, 30%, 20%. The dams are empty, the San Luis Reservoir is empty. What are you going to do about that? The congressional seat, United States Congress, you're gonna have to hang up your degree in and put the gloves on and sharpen up the tongue because that's going to be needed.
Yep.
So those are my three.
Three things. Thank you so much. Valid concerns all the way across the board. Let me start with taxes, because that's, as a businessman myself, I've got ag businesses. I've got a senior housing place. I started up a number of business, kind of serial entrepreneur, and I see how those taxes affect me. It's tough to do business in California. I say to everyone, you know, California is the best place for business, and it's the worst place for business, right? I couldn't have my almond businesses in Nevada or Texas, right? We couldn't have some of our coastal businesses there. But yeah, are we burdened by high taxes? Yeah, but guess what just happened? Is that with this tax bill that was passed last year, that's sending $12 billion more back to Washington that we're not getting back here. That was a big tax raise on Californians. And that's what I see, is that a lot of our problem is that our taxes go to Washington and they don't come back. The reason why we have crappy roads is because we don't get the infrastructure investments that we deserve back to here. In the Central Valley, we get something like $6,000 per person per capita investment back from the government. In Appalachia, very similar demographics and all that, they get 12, twice as much. So we don't get our fair share, number one. And so that's what I say, is that if we get our fair share, a lot of the taxes and some of these additional fees that we have to pay, we wouldn't have to be paying. And I'm not asking for anything more. I just want our fair share back. With regard to the water, once again, innovative investments in infrastructure, right? Downstream water banking that puts water, we can create those right away, that we could put the water under local control, not federal control, but under our local water districts. You know, we could have the distribution systems and the conveyance systems, so when we have huge waterfall events and excess water events like we had in 2017, you know, there was, I forgot what the figure was, but it was millions of acre feet that went out to the ocean that could have gone across the Central Valley, recharged our aquifers for a long, long time. And then these conservation methods, that all those things that can be done right now, you know, as we look towards maybe some more surface storage as well. And regarding the cannabis, you know, that's a tricky question for me, because, you know, is that, I'm not a cannabis user, right? type of a guy. But I can tell you is that I've seen the positive benefits it's had among some people, and me personally, or not myself personally, but within my family, from people that have had cancer, right? They have chemo, they don't want to eat. You give them a little gummy bear, a little brownie, and they're scarfing down food and getting healthy. It's something that's passed in California. What we need to do, though, is have some type of federal banking system, because there's all this cash that's being created. And when you create so much cash, you're creating lots of opportunities for crime. And some control. That's the word. Thank you so much. So control. And what I would actually like to see is that all this revenue that's generated by cannabis industries goes right back, not to the state, but back to the local governments, right? For things like control, you know, more police, more enforcement. So we know where it's going, who's not, you're not doing black market things, you're not having people held up, and being reinvested not only in the, not just for the municipal services, but reinvested back into the community. So that's what I'd like to see. Thank you. Sir?
When you step up to the mic, can you say your name and where you're from, please?
My name is Gabriel Verduzco. I live in Fresno, in Fresno County, for almost 52 years. And I want to ask you a few questions, because you answer any question for my friends here is fine. Remember, the Radio Bilingue recording you, Samuel Orozco and Sammy Rodriguez. So, okay. And my family is about 18 people. I want to go with you this time. 18 people and my family. So remember the poor people, and the poor people support you, and you support the poor people. That's it.
Oh, thank you.
Listening to a congressional town hall in California's District 21 in Sanger, Democratic candidate T.J. Cox answers questions from members of the public. Republican incumbent David Valadao declined the invitation. This program will continue after the break.